From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Tuesday, September 11th, 2001, dawned temperate and nearly cloudless in the eastern United States. So begins the 9/11 Commission Report, the American government's definitive accounting of the events of that terrible day. It continues, "Millions of men and women readied themselves for work. Some made their way to the Twin Towers, the signature structures of the World Trade Center complex in New York City." Among them was Andrea Lynn Haberman, a 25-year-old woman originally from Wisconsin, but at the time living in Chicago. She was among 9 Illinoisans who were killed that day. In the World Trade Center, the list also included Kathy Bantis, 44, of Chicago, Susan Kondratenko, 27, of Chicago, Daria Lynn, 32, of Chicago, Robert Arthur Rasmussen, 42, of Hinsdale, and Susan Sauer, 48, of Chicago. Also in New York, Jeffrey Peter Miladnik, 43, of Hinsdale, was killed on Flight 11. And 2 Illinoisans, both serving in the Navy, were killed at the Pentagon. Lieutenant Commander Patrick Jude Murphy, age 38, of Flossmoor, and Commander Dan Frederick Schanauer, 40, of Naperville. This weekend marks 2 decades since the attacks. Today, on the 21st, we're going to be talking about 9/11 from several different vantage points here in Illinois. For the youngest among us, 9/11 has become a topic covered in history classes. Later on the program, we'll speak with teachers about imparting the experience of 9/11 to students who don't have our firsthand memories of that day. While those of us who lived through September 11th will never forget what that day felt like, it's also something most Illinoisans were fortunate enough to experience as a news event, at a distance, on television. That was not a privilege shared by Al Kaladzic of Naperville. Earlier, I mentioned Andrea Haberman, a 25-year-old Chicagoan killed in the North Tower of the World Trade Center.
You know, unfortunately, I've come to the realization that time is your best friend and also your worst enemy. With every year that goes by, you never forget, but unfortunately, you do forget some things.
Andrea and Al had been college sweethearts. They met at St. Norbert's in Wisconsin and were set to be married in September 2002. I spoke with Al Wednesday afternoon and began by asking him how he and Andrea got together.
St. Norbert's is a small college right outside of Green Bay in a town called De Pere. We met freshman year, but we, you know, were just acquaintances. We didn't start dating until sophomore year of college. And it was actually in September, September 23rd of 1995 is actually when we started dating. You know, throughout the rest of college, we, you know, dated. And then after we graduated, she moved down to Chicago, actually in with myself and my parents for probably about a month while she was searching for a job. And then she got a job with a company called Car Futures, which was based in the city of Chicago, but they also did have an office in New York and also overseas. We got ourselves an apartment soon after, you know, by the end of that summer in near my parents, and my parents lived in Chicago. And about a year and a half, 2 years later, we bought a house in Chicago, and we moved in May of 2001.
Well, so you've moved to Chicago. She has this job. I understand this. She was then on her first trip to New York City on September 11th. It was a business trip. What do you remember about her, what she was doing there?
So she was the executive assistant to the president of the company for Car Futures. And he had just been named president of the United States. Not, you know, president of the United States, but president of it for his company. So they had an office at the World Trade Center in New York and also in Chicago. And so he was going to start making regular trips, I think once or twice a month to New York. And this was going to be his first one. And there was going to be 2 girls that were going to be going with him. You know, they were going to basically take turns. The first trip was actually going to be one of her colleagues. But she had a scheduling conflict for this first trip that was on September 11th. So Andrea went in her place, actually. And so she left on September 10th. And in New York that night on September 10th, they had a lot of bad weather. I think her first flight was going to leave maybe 2 o'clock in the afternoon, approximately. I snuck home from work to say goodbye to her, make sure she had everything. She was very nervous about going on her first trip. You know, she was a Wisconsin girl, so she wasn't used to the big city. She handled Chicago very well. She became accustomed to it, and she did a great job of that. And so she was still nervous about going to New York by herself for the first time. And so I came home to say goodbye to her. She left for the airport. I mean, the company had sent the car for her, and we only lived maybe 10 minutes from O'Hare Airport. And she gets there, and her first flight was canceled because of the bad weather. So as it is, you know, from Chicago to New York, there's flights, you know, every half an hour. I've missed a couple of my days and just jumped on the next one. And so the second flight she was scheduled to go on, that was canceled too. And that was about, you know, later in the afternoon, you know, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. And I told her, you know what, just come home. Just go out there, you know, catch a flight in the morning. There was one leaving at 6. I said, you know, you'll get there in time and you'll be at the office by 9 o'clock. And she goes, well, I already checked my bag. She said, if the next one gets canceled, I'll come home and I'll take a flight in the morning. And unfortunately, that flight took off and she, you know, arrived in New York that night. And I got a call from her probably a little bit after 10 o'clock saying that she had arrived at the hotel and was settling in.
And so that's the night of September 10th. September 11th, the morning comes. I understand she had called you that morning from the World Trade Center before the first plane hit. What do you remember about that phone call?
So we used to have a little contest because I worked in the road construction industry, and she used to leave early, you know, because she worked for a brokerage firm and the markets opened early. So she'd get to work, you know, she'd leave almost when I did, you know, sometimes, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning, 6:30, we'd always have a contest who could be the first one to call after 7 o'clock, you know, so who was paying attention to the clock. So she called me that morning and it was, you know, 8 o'clock, a little bit after 8 o'clock New York time, and a little bit after 7 o'clock here. We did talk for a little bit. She said, you know, she missed me. She was up obviously very high, 92nd floor of the North Tower. And she said she, you know, had quite the view. She could see the Statue of Liberty. She could see the ferries coming across, you know, bringing people over from Jersey into, you know, towards the financial district. She said it was a nice view, but she was a little nervous about being there. You know, first time, she didn't know anybody in the office. She had talked to plenty of people in that office, but she's never met anybody from that office. And she was waiting for basically her counterpart from the New York office to come meet her in the office that morning. And she was running just a little bit late. That woman had actually decided to drive that day, and she had a little bit of a hard time finding a parking spot. And then she stopped for a bagel, and that's when the first plane hit. So her counterpart wasn't in the building at the time. She was actually on the phone with Chicago when the plane hit with a gentleman named Henry. And, you know, obviously the phone line went dead, and that was the last time anybody had talked to her. So, but we did hang up the phone and, you know, said, I love you to each other, and, you know, said, we'll talk a little bit later on that day.
And what do you know about what happened after the plane hit the tower that morning to her?
So her family and I, you know, especially her family, the Havermans, you know, tried to investigate as much as they could. And we had talked to numerous other family members that work for the same company that were, you know, based in New York, and, you know, talked to them because they said they had gotten phone calls from their loved ones being on the same floor. And they said, you know, they were trapped. They were unable to get out. And, you know, I called her phone, I don't know how many times, trying to get through. A lot of times it did ring. Other times it was just a busy signal, you know, like a circuit busy. She did have her cell phone with her. And I was trying, you know, she gave me the number to her desk there. And also she had her cell phone. So all we know is that from talking to the other family members and getting a sense of who they were, the ones that were lost, for her company there on that floor, you know, that they were all excellent people. They were all caring, and that they would have done their best to try to comfort her and take care of her until, you know, they were trying to get out, but obviously they didn't make it out. Nobody above 91 got out. Some couple people from 91st, the 91st floor got out, but she was on the 92nd. So 92nd and above, nobody got out.
I wonder, how long did it take you to realize, you know, that was your last conversation with her that morning? You know, that what was the process like for you in the following hours and days and weeks and months?
Oh, it was definitely very hard. You know, always, you know, every time my phone rang, I was hoping it was her. You know, 2 days later, we did travel to New York. We drove. I went and picked up her parents in Wisconsin, and then we drove straight to New York. They, you know, we couldn't get down to the site. Her company had reserved a room for us at the Waldorf and set up a kind of a room for all the families to get together. So, you know, to be together, even though we didn't know anybody, but that was nice. And we met a really great family, the Meehans, and Damien was on the floor with her, who he didn't know. And his brother, Mike, was a New York City detective at the time. And so he would come in and kind of, you know, he was still dust and, you know, all over him, because he would get down to the site to see what he could find out and kind of give us a briefing. And, you know, in my back of my head, I knew she was kind of gone, but there was always hope that, you know, she had gotten out. You know, we had gone to the armory to do the missing person so we could get our, you know, the, you know, drop off DNA. You know, I had brought clothes for her in the hope that, you know, we would be able to find her. You know, checking hospitals like everybody was, you know, not knowing maybe she was, you know, she got pulled out with no identification on her. Who would know who she was? So it, you know, it was always in the back of my head that she was gone, but it's always in the back of my head too, that she was alive.
I understand that the cell phone you mentioned she had with her, that you spoke with her on, it was one of the items that was recovered and is now part of the 9/11 Memorial Museum's collection. I wonder if you visited the memorial at all and what that might have been like.
Many times. Been there many times, and I'm traveling there again this Friday for the 20th anniversary. So I've seen it. You know, I was there at her parents' house when it arrived. You know, when they sent back the items that they found basically the contents of her whole purse, and her wallet was intact. You know, the money was still in there. My business card was in there. You know, tickets to concerts we had just been to not too long ago that summer were still in there. You know, her driver's license, glasses, keys, you know, Blockbuster card. It's kind of like a time capsule, so to speak, that anybody who looks at it now, I'm sure young kids goes, what's a Blockbuster card?
Yeah.
So that stuff is on display. It actually gets moved. It's not there permanently on display. It kind of rotates in and out with other artifacts. So in the museum, so I've seen it on display. It's very nice to see. It's kind of weird to see my business card in there and, you know, all of her stuff. And it you know, looks pretty close to the way it did last time I saw it, which is very odd, covered in dust. You know, it had been waterlogged a little bit, but the, you know, the glasses were broken. Phone was a little bit, but a lot of the other contents looked pretty well, pretty good.
Yeah.
So it's very nice that, you know, they waited for me to get there to open up all that stuff. And then we held on to it for a couple of years. And then we decided to donate it to the museum.
Al, last question. 20 years later, how do you want Andrea to be remembered?
She was just a very kind person and very loving. And, you know, she was, you know, a tad bit shy, but once she relaxed and, you know, you got to know her a little bit, she was just a great, great person to be around and just had a lot of fun. And, you know, I think because of her, she made me a better person. And I think she made a lot of people better. The people we've met because of her has been fantastic, you know, to the point where you know, one of their old customers at the restaurant they used to own was a Milwaukee Journal reporter, a writer. And he decided to write a book about not only her a little bit and a little bit about us, but about all the people we've met because of her that helped us along the way. And, you know, all the proceeds go to charity, or a portion of the proceeds. I don't want to misspeak, but I'm pretty sure a portion of them or all of them go to charity, actually. And it's a book that we've had around for about 10 years now, and it's fantastic. And I try to hand out as many as I can over the years.
And what's the book called?
It's called Just a Few Sleeps Away. Just a Few Sleeps Away. And I would try to order a bunch on Amazon every year and try to kind of hand them out to people that I tell the story to.
Well, Al Kaladzic, I want to thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I'm sorry for your loss, but I do appreciate you taking the time to speak with us about it.
No problem at all. I appreciate it.
Al Kaladzic and Andrea Lynn Haberman were engaged to be married. She was 25 years old on September 11th, 2001, and she was among 9 Illinoisans killed in the attacks of that day. You're listening to The 21st. More to come after a short break. Stay with us.